honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
We'll start off with Mayo lads, Connacht champions. A big deal, you'd have to say, for Mayo. First time since they've won it since 2015. More importantly, they're straight into an All-Ireland semi-final. There's no messing around with Super 8s, no three more games, having Mayo come through the qualifiers, played five already. Like, I mean, they're going to be fresh. It's 3 weeks' time. And you'd have to say, Keane, they've won it the hard way. They've gone away to Leitrim, they've gone away to Roscommon, and they've gone away to Galway and beaten all three of them.
Yeah, it's been very impressive for them. I suppose this is just... this is just a qualifier route in a different name for Mayo, really, playing, a number of weeks in a row, and, you know, the do or die nature of the championship the way it is this year. I mean, it seems to kind of suit Mayo, that real ruthless knockout football, and fair play to them once again. Despite having different players and different personnel, they've risen to the occasion again and really dug it out. I suppose they had, you know, certainly would have had superiority over Leitrim, as you would have imagined. Really sort of dominated and blitzed Roscommon, and despite not playing overly well yesterday against Galway, just managed to survive, I guess, is the best way to put it. But fair play to them, they've done it again. And in Connacht, I suppose it'll be a sweet one for them, because as you say, they've maybe flattered to deceive within their own province the last number of years, so they'll be delighted to get provincial honours again.
Yeah, nice to see Aidan O'Shea lifting the cup as well. You know, he's lost so much throughout his career. Without going on about that, it was just a nice moment, I'm sure, for him. 10 of their 20 players, it was their first Connacht title. I suppose when you're looking at the way panels are changing all the time, that's 5 years ago. We have to talk, Conan, about the sideline at the end. Like, I mean, geez, Galway made a balls of this. Now, I thought, again, we'll talk about this game in part two. Mayo were the better team on the day, but Galway could have snatched it. So we have Shane Walsh pretty much making a balls of three sidelines in a row. So one, he went off the left. He should have gone off the outside of the right. He missed that. Then he got one a bit closer in to the 21. He went off the left again. That was probably the right option on that occasion. And then a little one out around the 45. This is pretty much the last kick of the game, and he chose to go short with that and made a balls of it. Now, Shane Walsh looked confused. Shane Walsh wanted, I know he's captain of the team, but he wanted direction there. And Pádraig Joyce said after the game, he said, again, we had a chance, but we messed it up and didn't force the draw. For me, that's on Pádraig Joyce to go down and talk to Shane Walsh there, Conor.
Pádraig Joyce has to take complete control there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just demand that you are taking that shot. Like, there's a big win there as well. It's Shane Walsh. It's a nice angle. We've seen a few people, like, unbelievably kick these over now over the last few weeks. And if it doesn't go over, it's probably still your best chance of scoring, because... remember, Gary Sykes has found a man really well, but he's kicked it 10 metres further forward, so the sideline's brought back. There is no way now that Mayo were going to let a short pass be taken, and then Paddy Durkin got in. Like, everybody was switched on. Like, you're not going to get a second chance to play that ball short with every Mayo jersey back. So Shane Walsh kicking that from a dead ball was your best option. And if it doesn't go over, it could break to a Galway player. It could be punched over. They could get a foul. Like, that was the option. I think Pádraig Joyce needs to demand that you're taking that on, because he's been talking about Shane Walsh being that player as well and being the Pádraig Joyce of this Galway team, and that was the moment, I think.
Yeah, like, I mean, in his defence, Keane, of the outside of the right, which is the kick you really have to go for there, we see them players at the very top level being able to kick them. It was probably into the wind at the start. The wind was coming probably across the field that direction. Now, it was with them, but from that side, you might have to put it into the wind until it starts bending back.
Yeah, look, I suppose not having been there, it's very difficult from watching on TV to gauge exactly how the wind was factoring in. But look, there's no doubt that Walsh was affected by the two frees he missed before that.
Yeah.
And that impacted upon his confidence. And you could almost see it when he went over to the sideline. He was almost looking, you know, to Conroy and looking to Pádraig Joyce, kind of thinking, well, will I go for it or will I pass it? Or, you know, whereas usually I've been in those situations myself, and I suppose maybe you learn from a bit of experience that sort of indecision, it just is no good for anybody. What you have to do is just say, do you know what, I'm going to go for it. And, you know, if I miss, I miss, but I'm having the moral courage to actually go and take it on with a bit of conviction. So, look, there's no doubt his confidence was affected by the previous two. And then when it came to the third opportunity, to my mind, he was a little bit unsure of himself and he shied away from it. To be honest, I felt at the time that this was like, oh my God, this is get out of jail for him. He's after missing two and he has a chance now to, I suppose, somewhat redeem himself a little bit at the end of the game. And it was, I think it was a shot to nothing because, as you pointed out, I mean, it was very congested, conditions underfoot very difficult. So the chances of getting a little 1-2 and getting the shot off were probably quite limited. Time was against them. It was a free shot. And to my mind, it should have been taken on. And if he was showing a little bit of indecision on it, I would have almost expected Paul Conroy to go and just take the ball and have a go at it because... I suppose maybe he could judge that himself and see that Walsh is maybe not feeling it. But Shane Walsh is one of their leaders. He's probably their go-to man. Everybody in the team probably looks to him as being their most talented player. So you can understand why players would defer to him and say, okay, Shane Walsh has the ball now. You know, he's going to go for it. So when he missed the first few, the two before it, I think it's just his confidence was gone. He didn't have the confidence in his kicking ability at the time to go for it. And I'm sure it's something he will learn from. And I don't expect to see him. I'm not saying he'll get them all in the future, but I certainly would expect him to look at that and say, you know what? I'm never going to allow myself to be in that position again, where just because I've missed a couple, I'm going to, you know, to a certain extent, feel sorry for myself or allow that, I suppose, that mental weakness or fragility set in. Yeah. You know, whether I get it or not, if my skills may let me down, but my mentality won't let me down. And
yeah,
that's like, something that he learned from perhaps.
Yeah, it's like a goalkeeper standing over a kick out, not knowing what to do with it. It sends panic throughout the team. Now, the big mistake he made was not going off the outside of the right on the first one, because we see these kicks they're very rarely kicked off the inside of the boot, and the left is slightly his weaker side. And if he'd gone for that first one, missed it, he would have got another one a couple of minutes later, and you know, he could have nailed it after the practice shot from the first one. He just took the wrong option the first time, and then his head was completely gone on the third one. A few weird refereeing decisions, like, I mean, Liam Silk was rode near the end. It was a fell up at his back, and he was given a free against him. The big one I saw you giving out on Twitter was the Paddy Durkin hit on Gary O'Donnell. Conan, he got a yellow card for this, one of the best timed shoulder to shoulder challenges that you'll ever see. I'd love the referee to explain what he's given a yellow card in that instance for.
It was literally picture perfect, wasn't it? It was just shoulder to shoulder, like straight as you like. You know, there was no hint of him coming in from behind him or coming in front of him. It was straight on his shoulder, not looking to do anything else but hit him on the shoulder, connected with him perfectly. The ball spilled out. The ref seemed to be, Herson seemed to be signalling that he caught him above the head. Now, which I always find very annoying, because either he's seen it or he hasn't, and if he has seen it, he hasn't seen that, because it was nowhere near catching him above the head. And you're right, like, even for that to be a free is extremely frustrating. And then for Durkin to turn around and get a yellow card when he was initially supposed to be marking Shane Walsh, like, that's a big, big call for a referee, and it could have affected the course of the game a lot more than it did.
It looked a bit severe because Gary O'Donnell wasn't expecting it, but that's not Paddy Durkin's fault. Like, I mean, he hit him lovely flush, and some people were saying that Gary O'Donnell didn't have control of the ball, but you don't have to have control of the ball to be hit with a fair shoulder. Players challenge each other with fair shoulders all the time, contesting a ball. So, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Gary O'Donnell got a lovely hit, it laid him out, and Paddy Durkin should have... you know, been celebrated rather than yellow card. We're not going to discuss the Owen McLaughlin black card incident about whether it was a black card. It was like just your pure professional foul, Keane. Like, I mean, he took his sin bin. He knew he was getting his sin bin. He didn't want to concede a goal. All those things. It always looks terrible when you see something like that. You're like, oh, Jesus. McLaughlin didn't care. You know, it wasn't that clear-cut a goal chance. It was Sean Kelly running through. He had Chris Barrett in front of him. So, like, I mean, I don't think it was a nailed-on goal, even if he hadn't done it. He was just making sure, I suppose.
Ah, yeah, well, look, it's a desperate chase back for the team to try and just, you know, prevent the opportunity. And, yeah, look, it's very unfortunate for Galway that it just happened at that particular time. I mean, another half a step and Kelly was away. And I suppose... When Kelly got the ball, I was thinking, Jesus, if he needs to move this ball to Johnny Heaney quick before he goes to contact, because if he goes to contact, it's game, you know, it's pretty much game over. There's no way Mayo are going to allow him to wriggle free. And McLaughlin, it was desperate. It was like it was a poor tackle, but look, I suppose in the nature of competitive sport, he did what his teammates would have expected him to do. But yeah, Johnny Heaney was just on his right shoulder for Kelly, and maybe he was just slightly behind him. God, if he was half a yard or a yard further on, Kelly would have been able to slip him that ball before the tackle came in, and then it was opened up. But as you say, Chris Barrett was right in front of him. Wasn't 100% guaranteed a goal, but it was, you would have imagined it was a fairly high percentage chance with the support runners he had with him. But look, Mayo won't care, McLaughlin won't care. You know, they feel that in do or die championship football, they did, you know, he did exactly what he needed to do for his team. And look, neutrals won't like it. Yeah, when you see something like that, you think, God, maybe there should be a more severe penalty, like that, if it's such a blatant foul. Well, like if it's such a blatant foul, maybe you just give a penalty, even if it's not inside the box or something. Like, it's just like we spoke about it before. Like, I mean, these sort of blatant fouls up in your forward line, you know, should that just be brought forward to a 14-yard free up the other end of the pitch, because you're clearly making absolutely no attempt to play the ball? I mean, that's the severe end of it, and maybe that's something you advocate for, because look, nobody likes to see it. We all just accept it as part of the game, but that doesn't make it right. And maybe those infringements where it's so blatantly not an attempt to play within the rules of the game, and they're clearly gaining such an advantage in the context of the game by making such a foul, maybe there needs to be a more severe penalty. And a black card is not really a severe penalty at that stage of the game. The more severe penalty is, a goal-scoring opportunity. And I can guarantee you, something like that will completely change the context of these games right until the very end, because teams would not just be allowed the opportunity to drag guys to the ground off the ball. I mean, if the opposition are taking a kick out and you drag the corner back to the ground and it's a penalty up the other end of the pitch, I mean, that would slightly change your mentality. But until there's a really severe penalty for those sort of infractions, then teams are going to continue to do them.
Yeah, the problem with that is referees will start giving penalties for genuine attempts to tackle, and we'll all be giving out. That's how they made a complete balls of it. What about Cavan, Conan? Like, I mean, they're the story of the weekend again. Like, I mean, you want to have an awful lot of respect for Cavan. They look down and out at the end of the league. You know, players missing, relegated, all those things that was being talked about with Cavan. They came from 7 down against Monaghan, then they beat Antrim, and the following week they come from 10 down against Monaghan. Mickey Graham was talking afterwards. He said to them after halftime, if this is to be our last act this year, let's die with our boots on. I told them, if this is to be our last 35 minutes, let's have a cut at it, because there's no point having a moral victory and losing by 4 or 5 points. Now, my answer to Mickey Graham would be, this is a knockout Ulster semi-final. Can that not be the fecking message before the match, Conan?
I think you're being very harsh again. I think Mickey Graham has seen what was happening, and he just reacted. I think he reacted in a really good way. Like, I could see why he might have been spooked by Down, because they were so fast, like Kerr and Mooney and just the running power they had coming through the middle. So I can see why Cavan wanted to have a few more bodies to try and chase him and to try and ward that off. But once Mickey Graham got a look at what was going on, I think he adjusted the team really well. And then putting Galligan and bringing on Madden and putting them inside, that just completely stretched Down. It meant that McKernan had to come right back when he was sweeping. He couldn't sweep out around the 40. He was right back in the 13 most of the time. There was chaos in there. Cavan were getting more space around the middle. They completely suffocated the kick out. And like, big McKernan, like I know Madden got man of the match, and that's who everybody was talking about, and he was spectacular. But Garage McKernan, like, he's on a different level. It's like when he has these 10 out of 10 games, we don't even consider it anymore, because you're just used to him winning 8 kickouts and kicking 50 meter scores, and it's unbelievable what he's bringing to Cavan. And like, you could tell from the very start when they came out at halftime, like Patrick Faulkner was one of them and Killian Clark was the other one, and they were just getting everyone going, and you could tell that they weren't going to let this go, and they had a couple of goal chances. They never, like, there was never one stage where they didn't look frightening, even when they were 10 points down. So it was actually a really enjoyable game. And once Cavan started taking over in the middle, you felt like they were always going to get back into it. And they got ahead, actually, with about, what, 8, 8-9 minutes to go as well.
Yeah, I think Down lost 10 of their 12 kickouts. So Faulkner to midfield, Galligan to 14, and Madden on in beside him, who's a big enough fella and can win in the air. Maybe Mickey Graham has stumbled across, you know, his best team at half time in a game. I don't know, Keane, I'm being too hard on Mickey Graham because what he's done with Cavan has been absolutely sensational. I'm being a little bit cheeky with him. I just do think it's a reflection of the modern game where, you know, Down have a lead. Cavan, let's keep it tight, lads. You know, let's go in at half time with something to build on instead of Cavan going, well, we're a better team than Down. Let's actually go in maybe leading by a point against the wind and really rip the script up for Down.
Yeah, well, I think Cavan have been a little bit conservative, maybe in the first half of, you know, all their championship games, really, against Monaghan. Well, maybe they were a little bit they were getting ripped apart by Monaghan, so I can't blame them for having to adjust things to be a bit defensive. But they seem to be a more exciting team going forward, and they seem to get more productivity when they just really have a cut at it and actually go after the game. You know, when they free up Faulkner from maybe defensive shackles and let him go and chase the ball and put pressure on the opposition in the middle sector of the field and up front, they just seem to be a little bit better. And when they're maybe a little bit more ambitious in their attacking play as well. I mean, they have some very, very big, powerful guys. And when they put the ball into them, they're well able to win it up front. And look, Gallagher's been pretty much a sensation in the Champions League with his ball-winning ability around the middle. I mean, and look,
he's in all-star territory now. This is knockout football. We spoke about Joe Brawley getting an all-star, I think it was 1998, based off two good games in the Ulster Championship. Galligan now has played three and has been outstanding. Like, I mean, he's a shoo-in at the moment for an All-Star.
Oh, well, he's definitely one of the top fetching midfielders around the place at the minute. And in terms of his impact on games, it's absolutely sensational. Like, for a guy who's come off the bench in a few games and he's just been absolutely awesome. And look, as Conan pointed out, like, Rod McKiernan is just, he's a colossus for Cavan. I mean, it wasn't just against Down where team looks to him, but I mean, my God, in the games up to now as well, the amount of kickouts he wins is just unbelievable. With himself and Galligan in there, and then the powerful presence of Clark and Faulkner, like, I mean, they have some serious footballers, and fair play to them. I mean, we can talk about the tactical approach and different things like that. I mean, look, maybe sometimes you get a bit lucky in games too, and things work for you, but Cavan went after it and chased it down, and Down played some lovely football at times in the first half, and it was, you know, when it works for them with the running off the shoulder and the pace of their players, I mean, it looks sensational. But, you know, in a dirty sort of a game there where it was underfoot conditions were heavy and it needed that bit of raw physical power, Cavan had it in spades. And, you know, considering the difficulty of the games they've had and the extra time against Monaghan, like, fair play to them, because they've had to dig deep in all of their games and they deserve huge credit for that.
Yeah, I think that they discussed the penalty on League Sunday. I have to say, when I saw the penalty first, I was like, yeah, it's definite penalty, touched it on the ground. I didn't even notice Conor Madden sneaking off the field and back in around and knocked it out of his hand. So it wasn't a penalty. I actually think Cavan would have won the game even without that penalty. Like, I mean, they'd gone three clear and then Down rallied. You know what I mean, Conan? Then you have to even wonder, was the wind that strong? Because Sheelan Johnson kicked one from outside the 45 for Down. And, like, I mean, if the wind is a very strong wind, you know, like, I mean, you're not going to be just, he's only a little slip of a fella.
Yeah, like, I don't think the wind played that big a part in it. And, like, you're right, Cavan were potent throughout. Like, Martin Riley in the first half was very disgruntled because he had gone through on goal and the ref pulled it back for a free. Like, he was definitely going to bury it. And the Down goal in the first half started with a kickout that was won inside their own 45. Not only was it caught beyond the sideline, so it should have been a sideline to Cavan, it was inside the 45, and the ref gave a mark for it, and Down went up and scored a goal. Like, I think Cavan would have, like, they just had their number, and they just completely, once they got blood in their nostrils, they didn't let up, and when they suffocated that kickout, there was no, like, I think Down's decision to bring off Liam Kerr as well was baffling. Like, he was really hurting, so even when Cavan were on top, it was still Mooney and Kerr that were driving through the middle, and the pace they had, it was serious, and they couldn't stop it, and for some reason, about 48 minutes in, like, Paddy Talley whipped him off and Down just looked a lot less dangerous. They got on top of Jerome Johnson as well, who had kicked five in the first half, but I think McLaughlin did a great job on him.
Yeah, big shout out to Conor Madden for the pass to Galligan for that mark. That's what the attacking mark is all about. None of this nonsense. It's a good boot down the field and a catch. And if you do that once or twice in either half, doesn't that add a lot of excitement to a game? And that's a mark that's worth an easy tap tap over score.
That's the ruling mark.
That's the Colin Parks. So that's the mark I had envisaged. Just to give one further shout out to Mickey Graham. Like, I mean, look at the 2 years. Forget about the league. I don't care about that. They were actually unlucky in the league this year. They'd won 3, 6 points usually keeps you up. They beat Monaghan last year. Hadn't beaten Monaghan in a long time. And then they went beat Armagh after a replay. You know, squeaky bum time in both those games. Then this year come along, beat Monaghan after being 7 down. Then beat Antrim in a defensive game, and then come down from 10 points against Down. Like, I mean, it's sensational. Now, they won't beat Donegal, but like, Mickey Graham has a lot of likability, and he's after doing an absolutely brilliant job with Cavan, and with some players back next year, there's no doubt that they can build on that. They'll absolutely kill me for writing them off so fast, but I think Donegal are 1-14 for that match. We'll talk about that on Thursday. I want to talk quickly about Donegal and the Pádraig Mógán goal, lads, and it just goes to show, Keane, the obsession with Michael Murphy, because I put Kennedy completely at fault for this, because Mike ball kicked into Michael Murphy. Aidan Farker's man marking Michael Murphy. Aidan Farker's job going out on that field is to follow him everywhere. Now, Aidan Farker was closer to Pádraig Mógán when the ball broke, and Kennedy stood there looking at him like Aidan Farker's going to chase Mógán, and then neither of them did it because Aidan Farker is watching correctly Michael Murphy. It's just Kennedy. It's not your job to watch Michael Murphy. We're to watch where Pádraig Mógán's going.
Yeah, well, I think it's what we talk about in terms of defensive decision making. These man marking jobs that guys are given, even when they're given the job, I mean, for God's sake, sometimes you have to have enough cop on to see what the danger is. Both Armagh players, I blame both of them, although Kennedy takes more of the blame because, I suppose, as you say, Farker was specifically given this thing on Michael Murphy, and we'll give him a bit of leeway. But either way, both of them were at fault. The threat was Mógán going in behind. Worst case scenario, gets popped back to Murphy, and he has a difficult scoring opportunity. But yeah, look, just very poor defensive decision making, and it cost them, because that goal, along with a couple of scores before half time, killed them in the game. But look, it does go to show the benefit of having Murphy in closer to goal, whereby he does occupy the thoughts and prayers of probably opposition defenders.
Yeah, and then I suppose both Farker and Kennedy let Mógán cut across them, and you should never do that. Like, I mean, you know, when a forward cuts across you, he's almost expecting to be fouled. Let's say Mógán couldn't believe that he cut across. Now, he is faster than the two of them, and suddenly he's in on goals. I saw Justin McNulty on Twitter, Colin, complaining about the steps Mógán took. I've seen much worse cases than this. Like, Justin McNulty, in all fairness, you've just been bet out the gate. Don't think that goal is going to make too much difference. Not the worst case of steps I've ever seen, Colin.
Death, taxes, and somebody on Twitter giving out about steps for a great goal. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Every time I see a great goal, it's ruined a day later by somebody pointing out that they've taken 6 or 7 steps. Great goal, get over it.
Yeah, but I would say 4 to 6 steps here, which is completely, in my mind, acceptable. Like, I mean, we've seen some goals when we're up to 12, 14 steps. Like, I mean, listen, Justin, this is not the time to be whinging about steps. Did you see Eaton Rafferty trying to hit Neil McGee, Keane? Like, I mean, I remember Stephen O'Neill.
I did, actually, yeah. That was quite entertaining. I'm just disappointed we didn't get a few replays of it.
Yeah, because this was the obvious clip that does the rounds of poor Stephen O'Neill years ago trying to hit McGee, and he's running in as hard as he can, going to knock Neil McGee. And Neil McGee doesn't really see him, and he just bounces off him like he's built of stone. And this Eaton Rafferty was the exact same thing, only Eaton Rafferty, you'd imagine, is a bigger man, had lined up McGee, and McGee's not really too bothered about it. He's just, you know, just standing, preparing himself for the shoulder. Eaton Rafferty is peeled out on the ground.
Yeah, well, McGee is an absolute beast of a man.
He's a beast.
It was a real throwback of the... I'm just disappointed he hand-passed the ball off. He needed to drive that ball 70 metres up the field after that hit and do a bit of a cheer and whatever. But yeah, Jesus Christ, it looked... I'd say Rafferty might have even got whiplash or something after it. Maybe Rafferty slipped. Maybe he lost his footing as he connected. But Jesus, it looked... It would do wonders for the aura of McGee as the Iron Man fullback. Anyway,
it definitely would. So I saw a half an hour of the Laois Dublin match before the hurling started, and we'll talk about that a bit in performance of the weekend. But one thing was noticeable is Laois had a turnover thrown up for trash talking. It was Robbie Piggott, and I was delighted with this because we saw this in the Cork Kerry match last weekend, Conan. And I'm delighted to see referees putting a stop to this, because you turn over a ball and you'll accept the kind of celebration. And it's kind of evolved from you celebrating the turnover to celebrating the turnover and tell your man you've turned over, you're useless or whatever they say to them. And it just looks poxy. And there's 2 weeks in a row, because I forgot to mention this last Monday when it was happened in the Cork game. And, you know, it's a great thing that referees are starting to clamp down on it.
It's happening all over. Like, there's that picture of all the Armagh boys around Michael Murphy as well. It's like, come on, lads, you're getting hammered. Michael Murphy is winning every ball. Like, the one time he gives away a free and everybody's around him. That one, I wonder, with Leash, was it because Piggott took it a bit too far and he seemed to throw John Small to the ground? Like, they were all cheering and then Piggott just got carried away, grabbed him and threw him to the ground, and the ref said, here, like, you've gone too far.
There you go. Now it's evolved from celebrating it to abusing him to now just throwing you on the ground.
Yeah. Killian Clark had a great post on Instagram, actually, because it happened to him as well in the first half. We're down, we're 10 points up, and they were laughing at him, and somebody had a little pull at his hair. He needed a bobble in his hair, and he put up that Michael Jordan picture, you know, that infamous meme where it's like, I took it personally. And then obviously Calvin went on and won the match. So it's not going well for these teams. It's these people who are trash talking and over celebrating winning a free. They're usually losing in the end.
Yeah, no, they usually are. Just one other point from that match is Ross Munley came on, and there was a stat doing the rounds, Keane, that Ross Munley is the only player in Leinster that has a Leinster medal outside of Dublin. And I was just wondering how depressing that is for the whole of the Leinster Championship. And we know how Dublin have dominated it to the point you're not even surprised. I just couldn't believe Leash were minus 15 the other night, because you knew what was coming. You know, the way Leash wouldn't completely defend, maybe with 14 behind the ball. And then I was thinking, like, I mean, is the All-Ireland going ahead in a similar direction? Like, Donegal have Murphy, McBrearty and Paddy McGrath with All-Ireland medals. Like, they won't be around for much longer. Kerry have probably more from 2014. Paul Murphy, Peter Crowley, David Moore and Stephen O'Brien, Geaney, James O'Donoghue. Kieran Sheehan, shout out to him from Cork, is still playing with one. But, like, I mean, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility for Dublin to continue winning All-Irelands until there's literally nobody left with All-Ireland medals, only Dublin players.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's depressing.
it's not outrageous, though. Like, I mean, the domination is just, it's out of control as far as I can see.
Yeah, well, look, and if it gets to the stage where there's no other inter-county players in the country that have All-Ireland medals outside of Dublin, I think it's time to... that we should all just quit and start analysing other sports or watching other sports.
Well, we can split Dublin then. There'll have to be a case for splitting Dublin.
Forget them. Just let them play the Dublin Club Championship and then have an inter-county campaign without Dublin, and it'd be grand then.
No, just give them the All-Ireland and play a B championship with everybody else.
Yeah. I got to go. But it's an interesting... I suppose, bit of information, but it puts it all into perspective, I suppose. Closest Meath have, I think Donal Keoghan was doing waterby for us when we won the Leinster in 2010, so maybe he's the closest Meath have to anyone who's won something. I remember for a long time when I was playing, it was Nigel Crawford was the only Meath player left with an All-Ireland medal, and this was a terrible thing at the time. God, it's just it's amazing how far the thing has turned, that you know, not only is there no one from Meath playing with an All-Ireland medal, there's no one with a Leinster medal, and pretty soon there'll be no one in the country outside Dublin without an All-Ireland medal. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's a very, very bad talk. Come here, Conor, I'm going to finish up this last one with you. So the BBC coverage getting loads of compliments. You know, Mickey Hart was on it. Saw Joe Brawley singing its praises again. They're obviously trying to dig in at RTE. Like, he's definitely scorned over that. He won't let it go. Here's my point to you. BBC coverage are Ulster-centric. There's no pundit from anywhere other than Ulster on BBC. And I have an issue with this because the GAA is a 32 county organisation. There's people down south who know a thing or two about football, even Ulster football, believe it or not. And they are just completely discriminating against every other province just for an Ulster bias.
Hang on, you boys want to come up and cover Ulster football when you can't even win a Leinster fucking championship? You couldn't possibly understand the depths of Ulster football, I think.
But this is worse than hurling snobbery. This is Ulster football snobbery at its worst. No pundit is invited onto the BBC to cover an Ulster match.
It is actually funny when you put it like that, considering the defensiveness of Ulster people, and they want to be seen as equal in the Irish stage as well, but now we don't let people into Ulster. But I would say that would be a stronger case if it wasn't for Canavan Hart and Ashley McConville. I just don't know who you're losing from that. Like, I don't, like, I'm all for Colin Parkinson coming up and analysing a match, but I'm not getting rid of one of those boys for it.
I'm not talking about myself now. You're only giving people the green light to start giving me shit about that. This is the point that I'm making, is that, listen, you have Ulster people whinging about the RT player we can't see, and what about us up here? Oh, you had Joe Brawley tweeting yesterday that people in Ulster are whinging about not being able to enter the competition at RTE. And here, not only have you got the three pundits, you go down to the sideline and you're more Ulster pundits. Listen, just accept that you play the poor mouth often enough, and when it comes down to it, you're not inclusive at all when it comes to your punditry.
What would come up, though? Do you know where it comes up saying, like, Peter Canavan, 3 All-Ireland medals, 6 Ulsters? What would come up? Kean Ward played in a few Leinster finals.
I have to. I have to laugh. The one time I was on the Sunday game, and like I was joking about this the next day, so I was on with Kieran Whelan and Tony Davis, and it flashed up. Kieran Whelan, All Stars, 6 Leinsters, whatever. Tony Davis, All Ireland, and then it came up Colin Parkinson, most influential journalist on Twitter or something. Because the Examiner had given me some stupid thing like that. Anyways, I thought that was funny. Right, we'll leave BBC coverage alone. We'll come back and look at the matches.
You ready? Let's go.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens, yeah. And it does happen. Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot. And the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's your name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out 30, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go! 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100%
reason to remember the name. Fort Minor. So we start off with the Connacht final, lads. Mayo 14, Galway 13. Not a brilliant game or anything like that, but I thought Galway kind of unrecognisable again from the team early in the league. I thought the obvious change for Galway was Gary O'Donnell kind of started as a wing forward but played wing back, and they played a sweeper. Wouldn't be overly critical about that against the wind with Aidan O'Shea in a full forward, Keen. I suppose when you add to the fact that they played Paul Kelly as a wing forward, as a defensive wing forward, and then you have Paul Conroy playing centre half forward and playing in midfield, now you're looking at a pretty defensive setup. Whereas you could kind of forgive the sweeper once it didn't mess up your shape too much. Now you're looking at your generic 12 behind the ball, a huge disconnect to your forwards, and Galway offered, outside of the very first point of the game and a point just before halftime, they offered zero really in an offensive capacity in the first half.
Yeah, they struggled going forward, but look, it was more to do with their skill execution most of the time. I mean, the quality of their ball retention and kick passing and hand passing, the basics of the game, handling errors, it was just really, really poor from them in the first half. And they continued to put themselves under pressure by the nature of the way they were playing, with trying to flood their defence and not give Mayo easy scoring opportunities with the wind to build up a lead. You know, they were, I suppose, stealing themselves of the opportunity to press Mayo in their defence. So anytime they did lose the ball high up the field, it was then into a period of Mayo possession. And then when Galway were getting their hands on the ball again, they'd make another silly mistake. And the majority of them were unforced errors from themselves.
Did they have enough players up in front of the ball? You know how hard it is to come out against the wind, you know? And like, I mean, they're trying to force a pass because there wasn't enough options in front of them.
Yeah, I think I could understand to a certain extent what they were trying to do was isolate guys with pace up front, like Keneally and Walsh and different things like that, and leave the open spaces to be able to play that ball into them. But their execution of it just wasn't good enough. Now, look, we'd probably like to have seen them with a couple more bodies up there, but that maybe plays a little bit into Mayo's hands at times, because Mayo's defenders like to just drive forward, and with the pace that they have, if you're a forward and you're maybe a yard or two behind one of those guys and they tear off up the field, you're going to find it very difficult to get back goal side and be any sort of use to your team in a defensive way. Galway were a little bit ponderous, but it was mainly to do with their skill execution, let them down. Like, when they did get possession, it was always going to be a slower build up against wind. And when they were trying to get their bodies back field by, you know, working the phases of possession, they were just giving the ball away, and Mayo kind of punished them. And that was probably the difference at the end of the game, was those mistakes from Galway players in possession, giving the ball away cheaply, like trying passes at times that weren't on. Like Conroy gave one in the first half from, he was coming out, he's maybe in the half back position or just into midfield, and he plays this pass into Keneally, scuttered in along the ground with a defender on his back, like just dreadful stuff. That it wasn't the right option, number one, and the execution of the pass was very poor as well. So they just got a little bit scrambled in what they were trying to do. And if you keep losing possession like that, it becomes wave after wave of Mayo attacks. So obviously, if you're a forward, you're going to have to run after your man because your team don't have the ball again. So I don't know if Galway necessarily were trying to be as defensive as it looked in the first half. They just couldn't get a platform in the game. Like, really what you need to do in those situations is get the ball up the field, you know, get a score, get the ball over the bar, and then maybe you have the opportunity to press, you know, on the opposition kick out, and then you have your players in place. But Galway didn't really get enough opportunity over the course of the 35 minutes of the first half to do that. So Mayo were just always on top, and it was those errors in that period of the game in the first half that actually cost Galway overall, because their second half performance was obviously, with the win, was significantly better. While still not being fantastic, it was significantly better in what was, you know, fairly dour game, really.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Gary O'Donnell, Shane Walsh, there was a good few of them guilty of the hand passes going astray in the first half. But, like, I mean, there was a great move just before halftime. Paul Kelly got a score, but that came off a free kick where he actually could get forwards into position. I think it was Michael Daly took the free kick, and it was into someone, lay off to Paul Kelly, good score. So, you know, the Johnny Heaney goal chance in the second half, a good ball, Shane Walsh down to Silk, I think, who popped it off to Heaney, running off the shoulder. Kind of reminiscent of how Galway were playing before, at the start of the league, before the lockdown, Conan. And we just didn't see any decent Galway play, you know, through the lines, anything like that. Like, I mean, their good play came from Shane Walsh and Paul Connery, who kicked spectacular scores, but they weren't good football scores. You know, these are just outstanding point kickers kicking outstanding points, rather than saying, geez, Galway are playing some good stuff here.
Through the lines is the best way you can put it, because Galway were playing such textbook football before the break. Like, everyone was looking at them thinking, that looks very simple, and it looks class as well, and they had the shape. I do really think that Mayo's runners from deep just messed up their shape. We have this conversation all the time. They almost worked too hard, and then they were out of position, and they tried to get back into position, but as Cian was saying, then a couple of just skittery balls. It seemed like Galway then, sometimes they were trying to do the right thing, but kicking it from too far, like terrible balls inside, like from way down the pitch.
Or, too far back, yeah.
Yeah, or like a couple of times to try to play those little 20-yard passes inside. It was rolling along the ground. And this is Mayo defenders as well. Like, they were all like right up their backsides. They were never going to let them pick up a handy ball, especially one that was like bouncing along the ground. So just a few bad decisions, and like executed poorly as well. Just like, That was so unlike what we had seen from Galway at the start of the year, where everything was just, it oozed confidence and class. And as I said, it was textbook. They went through the lines well, but this time it was just, they had no conviction in their kicking.
No conviction. I don't think Pádraig Joyce had conviction in what he believed in before the break, you know, until after the break. The spanking off Mayo obviously spooked him. And, you know, he went for the sweeper in front of Aidan O'Shea. Again, I'm not going to criticise that, because if Aidan O'Shea ran amok without a sweeper, you'd be given out. I just would be critical of not holding their shape a little bit more and giving them a chance. Because, like, I mean, Mayo showed at the start of the second half how to play against the wind, Keane. Like, those 3 points in a row at the start of the second half, that was practically game over at that stage. You know, it was 11-6. And, you know, actually attacking the game. You know, I think Mayo did a much better job playing into that wind than Galway did.
Yeah, look, they had more of a structure to them. They created more opportunities. They had the goal chance that was saved as well. Yeah, there was a bit more to Mayo in terms of just their regression playing against the wind and kind of, as you say, going for it a bit more. But I just think Galway just made more unforced errors across the game. Like, I mean, even in the second half, Conan has mentioned that they're trying to play the ball from too far. I mean, Conroy kicked one over the end line. I can't remember, someone else played the ball through to Keneally, which flew past him, and he couldn't keep it in play. Like, these are the sort of, there's only X amount of opportunities that you get in a match to get scores. And when you're cheaply kind of losing these opportunities. And then you're playing against a mature team like Mayo, who were able to hold on to possession that much better, work their opportunities a little bit better in the second half against the wind. You just don't get this. The ball doesn't keep coming back to you, and you can't afford to waste it. Because what happens then is when you're chasing a game, then a little bit of panic starts to set in for teams and they start to force things. And to their credit, despite all the errors and everything like that, like Galway were still right. They somehow had managed to stay right in the game until the end. Now, I would be more critical of, like, Mayo didn't play that well, really, in terms of they were the architects of their own downfall, because they didn't kill the game when the opportunity was there to kill the game. Like that break where I think it was McLaughlin was through and he had the goal shot saved. I mean, that has to be a goal. Like that, if Dublin are going through like that, that ball is in the back of the net and the game is over. And then they probably get a couple more goals on the counter-attack, you know, as the opposing team has to continue to chase the game. Like, it's when you're 3, 4, 5 points ahead, it's getting the goal, or it's getting the 2 or 3 more points to, you know, take the result beyond doubt. That's what kills a team. And Mayo didn't put Galway away. Now, and it was more, you know, that was probably what kept Galway in the game as much as, you know, good play from Galway. Because as you say, there wasn't a consistent period of good play from Galway. It was more individual brilliance and good point scoring from some of their top men rather than a kind of patterns of play that got them back into it. But yeah, like overall, Galway will be really, really disappointed because they didn't bring their best performance to the table at all. And they will feel that despite all the mistakes that they made, they still had an opportunity to salvage something from the game. And it looked, you know, in the latter stages of it, I mean, they had 3 opportunities really to get that game to a draw match with, you know, the accumulation of these chances with Walsh's 2 frees on the sideline. They were decent opportunities. And of course, they'll feel quite aggrieved with what looked like a fairly clear foul on Liam Silk as well, which was in a very scorable position. So, yeah, overall, Mayo just got across the line, did just about enough. But this is Mayo in these knockout games until they get to play Dublin. They're able to somehow manage to get over the line, sometimes with a bit of luck and sometimes with a bit of good play.
Yeah, I think they got the matchup on Aidan O'Shea perfect. Sean Kelly did a great job on Aidan. I think the minute Mayo realised that there was someone going to sweep in front of him, they brought him out to midfield. But Galway were doing well on their kickouts, and maybe they thought that they needed some help out there. But Sean Kelly's a real, he's a winter, I've described him as a league type of footballer. He's an old dog and he's got great heart, and he was the perfect man for Aidan O'Shea. Paddy Durkin picked up Shane Walsh, which is another fairly obvious matchup, Conor.
Yeah, and like what Sean Kelly did was what a lot of those good markers do then, is that they use that opportunity to go forward as well when they could, and he seemed to always be breaking forward really dangerously. Like he was the one man that it looked like Mayo were struggling to get a handle on. But I'm actually just so happy that they're using Aidan O'Shea this way, and like a big part of that's obviously down to Tommy Conroy as well, because he's lighting it up inside, and O'Shea is like a great bonus when he's inside and frees up Killian O'Connor and frees up Conroy. But like we've spoken about this loads of times, like O'Shea, I think at his best is a brilliant workhorse, like a really effective workhorse. And because he's such a big name and he's so effective at everything he does, sometimes everybody looks to him to be that match winner all the time. But he, like the accumulation is what Kane's talking about. Like Aidan O'Shea does enough to put a team in a position to win matches with his defensive work and his midfield work. And I just love seeing him out there. And I thought that was a good battle, because I don't think he was silenced anyway. He went through a mountain of work on him.
Yeah, I thought he had a fairly significant influence on the game, particularly in the second half when Mayo needed to just get their hands on the ball and hold on to it. And in fairness to him, as we know, he's an incredible man to be able to take punishment and take tackles and just break the line or draw in 2 defenders and then slip the ball off to the runner. And the unheralded work that Aidan O'Shea does, because he's not a spectacular player. He's not a good forward, but he's a fantastic focal point for a team to play off, because he gives a platform for other players around him to do well. And I thought he had a big influence on the game, despite the fact that Kelly had a really good game as well and was dangerous for Galway when he broke away from O'Shea. O'Shea's influence around the middle, just in terms of getting Mayo's hands on the ball, I thought was quite significant in the second half particularly.
Yeah, Michael Daly was fairly disappointing in midfield. Ian Burke seems to have lost his form completely. And then when you have when you have Shane Walsh drifting out around to the midfield, you're left with Desi Keneally, who, let's be honest, who has no experience as an inside forward at this level. He's kind of your main man then up front. It's just like, oh, Jesus, I don't know from Galway. I was disappointed with Galway. I thought it was interesting that Keane Darcy was taken off after 23 minutes. Now, he deserved to go off after 23 minutes. Steed did very little when he came on for him either, but Darcy never got his hands on the ball. I think one possession in 23 minutes. He was walking past Joyce. Joyce didn't even acknowledge him. Like, he just didn't even entertain him at all. I was wondering, is Joyce wrong for not consoling him after taking him off? Or the worst thing you want is the manager to put out his hand, Keane, and shake your hand. You know what I mean? You'd nearly feel like pushing him away there. Maybe you're better off being ignored in that situation.
Jesus, after 23 minutes, neither party wants to talk to each other for a few days, I'd say. Might be the best. You certainly don't want this fake little poxy handshake from somebody who's after pulling you off after 23 minutes. You'd certainly, listen, there's no player really warrants being taken off after 20 minutes unless they're having an absolute horror show with multiple mistakes. I mean, not getting your hands on the ball when your teammates around you consistently keep losing it on you, I mean, that's not really much of a reason to take a guy off. But nonetheless, if he was being specifically given a task and a job to do by the manager and he wasn't fulfilling that task, well then, look, that's what you'd expect, is to be whipped. But look, to be fair to Darcy, it was just a bit unlucky, I think, for himself in that Galway weren't getting much of a platform and he was the one that was sacrificed to get Steed on the pitch. And it's probably a case of the management maybe before the game probably wanted to start Steed, felt they couldn't. Maybe it was a borderline decision. And we see this a lot when there's a high-profile player who doesn't get a start in these games. I mean, if the team is not going well in the first 20 minutes, somebody gets sacrificed and scapegoated. And it's usually the guy who just about got the nod ahead of the other fella. And as you say, he didn't really have much of an impact on the game when he came in, but it's more a reflection of maybe where the management either rate their players more than anything that Darcy actually did for that time he was on the pitch.
Yeah, just to finish up, and it was interesting to see Sean Kelly for the throw-in on Aidan O'Shea. He didn't even entertain the throw-in. He just ran straight and bumped into Aidan O'Shea. Like a complete another foul that I don't know how players get away with that. Obstruction. In throw-ins, there seems to be all rules seem to go out the window once the throw-in gets away and somebody wins it. You can actually just kill each other and wrestle and not even entertain it. But anyways, we leave that game, lads, because Donegal were very impressive against Armagh. I had a bad weekend. Definitely the teams I've kind of backed, Armagh, Kildare and Galway, down through the last couple of years. I've given up on Armagh completely. They're done with me now. We've broken up. That's it. They were relatively competitive for the first 20 minutes until Donegal completely took over around the midfield, destroyed them. Armagh gave away the ball a lot. Like Stephen Campbell, like bouncing the ball as he runs past the player's tackle. This is just like one of the basic things. He did it twice in the game. Like one of the most basic things you do, if you're running past a player, don't solo or hop it. It's the time, where the contact is going to come, and it's just so stupid. We had Jared O'Byrne's calling marks and playing on and not really knowing whether to stop. This is a midfielder who should know what he's doing. And Rian O'Neill running around the field, running over, trying to get on freeze and look good off the outside of his boot. How about you win a kick out, Rian? Or how about you get in there? You're marking Owen Bongaller, who's half your size. How about you win a couple of hard balls? Instead of running around the field, someone else gets fouled and you looking to take the free. He was a major disappointment for me. His brother Oisín, he played fairly well and tried hard. But Rian, I've a lot of time for Rian O'Neill, but he needs a good kick up the arse because his head might be getting into the clouds because it was a terrible performance by him and a performance that made me think, does this lad want to get stuck in here or does he want to look good? And on the evidence of Saturday, he just wants to run around looking good. I think, Keane, the big problem with Armagh, with starting Armagh, and give a mention of Donegal then, I was thinking, what's wrong with them? Why are they so off the top teams? And I know what's wrong with them. They have no pace in their team. None. They have no pace in their forward line. And, where are you going? If on a couple of occasions, Rory Grugan got it in a dangerous position and he was one-on-one with his man. He could do nothing only turn around and go back out the field again. And it was Jared O'Byrne's in a good position as well, and he did the same. Jared O'Byrne has no pace in midfield. Oisín O'Neill has no pace. Forker has no pace. O'Neill, the wing-back, has no pace. You have Michael Shields, who has a bit of pace. We saw nothing of him. He was doing nothing. Their cornerbacks can attack all they want, but they've no pace. If you've no pace in your team, Stephen Campbell, no pace, Jamie Clark, no pace, Rhian O'Neill, no pace, Rory Grugan, no pace. They have no pace, Keith.
Sorry, what point are you trying to make there, Willie? I think you're being very harsh. I don't think they're entirely lacking in pace. I mean, look, they don't have any absolute outright flyers like Donegal seem to have multiple guys. And in fairness, a lot of lads can look maybe a little bit lethargic when they're running after some of them. But it maybe is a reflection of what happens when you play against a team like Donegal, who retain possession so well when you give it to them, that you end up going through multiple phases of play where you're moving left and right, you're chasing this way, that way, and the other way. And then when it does come an opportunity for you to get on the ball or to try and make something happen for yourselves, guys are dragged into positions that they don't want to be in on the field. They're, you know, you could be a corner forward and you're in the right corner back position, or you're in a half back position or in the middle of the field somewhere, and you're then trying to get back up to your position to then start making moves from it. And in fairness to Armagh, they try to play like they do, try to deliver the ball into their full forward line, you know, when they can. And there was times in the first half where they played some lovely, you know, they had some lovely opportunities where, you know, kind of decent foot passes in from the middle of the field and guys coming off the shoulder and things like that. And listen, it's just maybe their lack of midfield dominance to give them a platform in the game meant that they ended up chasing their tails all over the pitch for the whole match. And then the game basically went away from them with Padraig Mogan's goal and the 4 points in a row off their own kickouts before half time. And that was it. Game was over at that stage. That killed the game. Up to that point, Armagh were doing some good things, some not so good things, but they were still reasonably in the contest. And then I don't think it's really overly fair to analyse much in the second half of the match, because Donegal are such a good team that they just had an ability to snuff out danger. Armagh were trying to force things because they were so far behind. They maybe tried to force shots, tried to force the ball in from too far out, which is completely understandable. We see this with teams all the time, that this is what happens when the underdog goes behind. They kind of know that the gig is up for them. They don't continue to play the way that they would have spoken about before the game. They start to enforce things, start to, I suppose, overly maybe go for goals or take shots on that aren't on. And then it just, you keep giving the ball back to Donegal, and then it becomes a ridiculously demoralising sort of a game. And I think, look, I know I can understand your frustrations with Rhian Reaney, because he's such a talented player. We see so many good things from him. But to give him his due, late on in the game, it was him that was still continuing to make the hard chase back when Padraig Mogan is kicking the point over the bar. So I still think he was still trying to make an effort in terms of doing a job for the team and give a conscientious effort. But just in possession of the ball in the second half, it just wasn't happening for Armagh because they were trying to force things. And yeah, they will have to have a good look at themselves in terms of how they deal with the challenge of being into Division 1 next season, because they came up against a Donegal team that, when they couldn't win, like, it's one thing about, you know, not being able to win your own kick-out, but you shouldn't be conceding cheap scores just in rapid succession off your own kick-out. I mean,
yeah,
worst case scenario, they needed to be able to, you know, if the ball was going long, they needed to have enough bodies in around the break and certainly not leave themselves so exposed for such simple scores for Donegal, because that's what they were. It was one or two passes and they were into oceans of space in the Armagh defence. And that would be one thing that I'm sure Armagh would be very disappointed, is that when things kind of went against them, they didn't have an ability to just stem the tide and stay in the game. And really, that's why teams work so much on their kickouts and work in short kickouts, because if you can just get possession, get your hands on the ball, and just take 2 minutes off the clock playing against the wind, when you're after conceding a couple of scores, you need to get your hands on the ball. You need to not turn over possession, because the team loses energy when you keep losing possession. And certainly when it's point after point after point, you can just see the energy level drops in the team and you're gone. So Armagh needed to be able to have the ability to just hold on to possession, be mature on the ball, work an opportunity, get up the field, draw a foul, or, you know, even if you're not, you know, overly aggressively chasing scores, that at least you're, you know, breathing a little bit of energy back into the team and a little bit of confidence. And at periods in the first half, Armagh were doing pretty okay with that. I mean, Jamie Clark was dropping out the field. He was getting on the ball. Okay, not a lot is happening. You know, a lot of it can be quite lateral, but at least they're keeping the ball away from Donegal. As an underdog, they're getting themselves into the game. And really, when you play against Donegal, you have to keep their hands off the ball, because as soon as you turn over the ball with them, I mean, Jesus Christ, they're a nightmare to try and get them back off.
Well, the problem with them, I can see, is that they can't beat their direct marker, so they can never get a player over and get a run on Donegal. Donegal were comfortable, or else Armagh don't want to go past in case they lose possession in the tackle. But you're right, from Armagh's kickouts in the first half, there's nothing more demoralising when you're playing against the wind, is when a point is kicked, and from the very next kickout, another point is kicked. Now there's a real sense of, oh shit, you know, and there's a big cheer from the other team. Donegal did that twice in the first half. They followed up scores with slamming the Armagh kick out and nailing another one. And that's what really disappointed me, Conan, at the start of the second half. And I really noticed this was first point of the second half was Aireann O'Neill free. Now, from a free kick, we know there's no excuse for not pressing the next kick out. Aireann O'Neill kicked the free, turned around, turned his back to this and ran back out towards midfield. Donegal took the short free kick to the corner forward. Now, how on earth is a team not going to have a press organised that if Aireann O'Neill should never have to run back out to midfield? Because Aireann O'Neill should be told, when you kick that free, you're over on whoever's free there and someone else will cover for you. Like, this is unforgivable stuff.
It is, and it's actually, it's very basic. Like, you're not always going to get your press on. You're not going to get, you know, against Donegal especially. But when you're that far down, you need to get it on as much as possible. And the one time you can definitely get it on is when you have a free. Like, yeah, and that's what the better teams do. They set it up before he takes the free, and then usually what would happen is the free taker, you see it with Dean Rock all the time, he occupies the space where he's kicking the ball from, and then everybody else fills in around that. He doesn't have to run back out to midfield or whatever else. There's a lot of stuff wrong, like, and Keane's mentioned most of it there, but one of the big things for me was just the lack of intensity that they brought to the game as well. Like, Donegal came to that match prepared for an Ulster semi-final. And then they stayed at that level until they didn't have to any longer. Armagh just had a complete lack of bite. And I'm surprised, like, you know, for a team managed by Kieran McGeaney. But, like, you mentioned the Ryan Kennedy thing and the Faulkner thing at the start. There was also one where Jamie Brennan just started with soloing backwards and then just burst through Kennedy. And I think it was Conor O'Neill and clipped the ball over the bar. And there was just a real lack of that the whole way through. And we're talking about
pace though. Brennan has pace. Like, Jamie Clark could never score like that. Jamie Clark's a brilliant player. But you see, without pace and without being willing to take a man on, you know, like, I mean, the good teams all have it.
Yeah, but there was just a few, like, sort of simple things as well. With, like, Ryan Kennedy, I think he was detailed to mark Paddy McBurtie because he went on him when McBurtie came on. But when McBurtie didn't start the match and he didn't play for what was a 60-odd minutes, like, Kennedy, who is a man marker and did a great job on Shane McGuigan against Derry, he was just sort of floating around, offering nothing to the team, and there was no adjustment there. Like, Faulkner, I thought, wasn't winning anything off Murphy, and I know that's tough, but Faulkner's a good player. Can he be released to do something? Couldn't believe that Niall Grimley didn't start. Like, he was amazing. He was the big reason why they changed the game against Derry when it looked like it was getting away from him. He came on and started winning ball, but he didn't come on until after the half-hour mark, and by that stage, a lot of damage was done as well. And just finally, like, I hate this idea of, like, you know, midfielders dropping back. And I saw, like, Jarl Vaughan Burns doing it a few times, and it's obviously a tactic where they're back in front of the full forward, like, at the edge of their own square, like Colm Cavanagh. When has Donegal ever struggled with that? Like, the action's happening around that player. He's just standing there now like a sausage in the middle of the goal, like, doing nothing while teams are clipping over points and getting more space. Like that guy needs to come out and start engaging players, because Donegal see a 2-on-1 in there. They're not going to use that player anymore.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. What you want to actually do is encourage Donegal to kick the ball, because if you just allow them to get into their patterns of hand passing the ball and keeping possession, sometimes with a team, well, certainly for Donegal, there's a couple of basics you have to do. Number one is you do not allow them to just take a short kick out. Okay, Patton is brilliant, and you can sometimes get hurt with the long one, but for God's sake, everybody knows what's happening at this stage with that one. I mean, surely to God, teams can react to it, but you can't just, you know, say, oh, we're all going to stand back in our own half here, put no pressure on the ball and allow Donegal do what they want. You have to engage them on their own kick out and put them under a bit of pressure. Tyrone did it reasonably well, and despite how good, like Patton was back to, in fairness, his imperious best pretty much again, but he got a bit of confidence in the game because he was able to do all the things with relative ease at the start of the match. I mean, what you have to do is put pressure on people, because what happens is a couple of mistakes in a game from any player, it doesn't matter who you are, and it's going to start impacting upon their confidence levels in the game. I mean, mistakes compound mistakes. That's just the way it works. So pressure is what you have to do. Like, if you're playing against somebody, you have to test them in every way. You can't just decide, oh, do you know what? They're very good. We'll just leave them off there and put them under no pressure. Like, I mean, that's a ridiculous approach to take. So
yeah,
you have to aggressively go after these things. So Armagh were very disappointing. And you picked up on the example I was going to talk about as well, which was just absolutely mind-bogglingly ridiculous how you're chasing a game. You start the second half great. You go down, you get a free, get a score, no pressure on the man. Just rolled out to the corner back. And yeah, then to try his condensate, drop a man back in when Donegal rarely kicked the ball in anyway. I mean, it's bad stuff. And like, even when the ball was going into Murphy, even when it was one-on-one, when the ball is in the air, Armagh defenders have an opportunity then to get back in there. The man who's marking Murphy has to try and just break the ball, difficult conditions, get the ball onto the ground, and then other defenders are there to try and swallow him up. And they did that quite, like, Murphy wasn't that effective in the inside line when he was in there, really. I mean, if you look at the balls that went into him, most of them came back out again. So, I mean, why would you sacrifice your entire team setup to just go after that? I mean, you have to continue to back yourself and play the game and think that you can hurt Donegal, as opposed to just allowing them to play the game the way they want to play it. Like, I mean, that's the ultimate thing with Donegal anyway.
Yeah. Another thing on the matchups, I know you were saying, Conan, that Armagh might have been surprised, or they were surprised that Kennedy wasn't Mark McBrady. I'd say Donegal or Armagh were taken by surprise that Neil McGee took up Clark. I know he's done well on him before, and it was Owen Bon Gallagher on Rian O'Neill, because surely with the pressure Armagh were under from kickouts, that Rian O'Neill could have been isolated with Bon Gallagher and a few kickouts go to him, you know, and win a hard ball, especially when their midfielders were all being, yeah, you know, beaten very well. One thing you say about Donegal, and McGuinness touched on this, is that they're very strong in nearly every aspect of the game. They're great on their own kickouts. They're great on opposition's kickouts. They have scorers, long distance. They have pace inside. They have pace out the field. They have patience when they're faced with a mass defence. They have a kicking game. They have a running game. There's no real obvious weaknesses to them. The only thing, all their strengths, Dublin probably are a little bit better at every one of them, but that's nothing to be too ashamed of. But this is the one thing I see: Dublin, Donegal, and these teams. And I see Armagh falling down on this. I see Kildare. I see Kerry. I see them all having a decent game going forward. So say any of those teams win a ball off their own kick out, they have forwards in position. They can play through their half forward line, give a good diagonal ball, whatever. That's fine. That's not the case, as we know, and we keep making the point, other teams will drag your forwards out of position and everything. So there's always points in the game where you take a short kick out, the opposition realise, right, we don't have a press on here, we'll just drop off them. This is where Armagh are screwed. Kildare, Kerry, all these teams that prefer the kicking game, they don't have a game that can break down a team that drops off them. You know what I mean? They just can't handle that. Now, whether I'm putting it down to pace with Armagh, I'm putting it down to just hating that style of football maybe with Kerry, but they're not good in broken play, in hand-passing kind of games where, you know, it's just everything's a little bit all over the place. What Donegal will do in that situation is they'll completely slow it down and almost tease the other team to go way off them and give them a minute to breathe on the ball and let's set the tack up from there. McFadden will get ahead of the ball, McGonagall will get ahead of the ball. Now Donegal have planned for this scenario unfolding, you know, whereas I see Armagh panicked. I see, you know, Kildare, Kerry, I'm using those examples of teams that see this in front of them and go, oh shit, Donegal see this in front of them and go, we've walked through this, this is fine.
Yeah, I remember watching Donegal against Down, was it a year or two ago? It was Bonner's first year, and yeah, it was very interesting. Like, you would often hear it where, you know, when they slow the play down around the 45-metre mark and they come back out, and, you know, people would often think that they're just trying to entice Armagh out or whatever. But it's usually, you're mentioning, it's usually they're just setting up an attack. And like, you would see that game I'm mentioning against Down, where like four people went into the full forward line, people went out wide, they just started setting up this new formation. And like, you're right, like the amount of different options that they have then, like we're talking about Michael Murphy inside, if Jamie Brennan's there and if Patrick McBurtley's there, like they've got so many different things now and different ways that they can hurt you. If you step off them and worry about those players, you have Langan and Thompson coming in. And often when they're pulling back, they're not just saying we're not getting involved in this type of football. They're just slowing it down. They're keeping possession and they're setting it up. They realize that team is everybody back. Now we need to flick into a different mode here. We can't keep attacking the way we were.
Because there's two. Obviously, there's different scenarios that you have to practice for Keane in every game. And we'll finish on this point now. And one of them, absolutely, no matter what your style is, there are going to be times in the game the opposition is 12, 13 behind the ball. What do you do in that situation? There's going to be times in the game where they have a full press on you. What do we do in that situation? There's going to be times in the game we get a kick out away, we have our shape, we win our kick out. What are we going to do in that scenario? Like, there's loads of different scenarios that are very, very obviously going to unfold in every single game.
That there is, yeah. I mean, look, it's amazing the amount of times the teams have that they just, I suppose, are struggling with the basic concepts of it, really. I mean, like, while I don't agree that everybody should be trying to just copy the Dublin platform, because not everybody has those kind of tools at their disposal in terms of the way Dublin like to play the game and having it so fluid and positionally, and same as Donegal, you know, everybody has strengths to their team, but it's about trying to maximize your strengths and overcoming the weaknesses that you have. But there are certain scenarios that are just, like, for every team it's going to be different. So for example, you Conan pointed it there that Donegal, you know, they get the ball, they're facing a mass defense. Okay, they'll get the ball to Ryan McHugh. Ryan McHugh will run around for 2 or 3 minutes with the ball in his hand while his man is aimlessly trying to get the ball off. Not going to happen. it allows the whole team, like you see sometimes, maybe Michael Murphy, if he's been man-marked by somebody or if he's two men on him, he'll make a move out to try and drag one or two defenders away. And then all of a sudden you'll see Hugh McFadden will end up being the player furthest forward for Donegal. I mean, it happened the other day. He went all the way in, then turned, sprinted straight out to the ball carrier. Just a simple punt pass in, dived down, collected it, mark over the bar. I mean, every team has players that can do those basic fundamentals of the game. And what it's about is manipulating the positioning of the ball, working the movement of your own team to make sure that you're just creating a mismatch somewhere on the pitch, be it a player that you have that's really, really quick. You try and isolate him, maybe one-on-one with a player, and create the space around them. If you have a very big guy, you're maybe trying to do something similar. So every team has the opportunity to work on all of these different game scenarios. And look, we can only assume that that's what teams are working on and that the execution in the given day just isn't there. But some of it is almost, it looks so clueless at times. And not everything can be done, obviously, with a whiteboard. I mean, ultimately, what any coach is trying to do is give the players the tools to make good decisions in the game scenario. And Dublin have better decision makers and they have better skill execution than most teams, but they also have the movement and mobility that is drilled into them. So they all kind of have a reasonable idea of what they're supposed to be doing. Donegal are very, very secure and confident in the game that they're trying to play. If you watch a lot of Donegal club games, I mean, they are played in, particularly when it gets to the latter stage of their club championship, they're played in very heavy ground, very, very dour football, very low scoring, attritional, but it's predominantly about ball retention. And that's how the Donegal senior team plays. So that's a style that suits them. Like, every county has to try and find the right balance for themselves. You saw Kerry trying to develop a system to beat Dublin, playing it against Cork and it not working. And shooting themselves in the foot when they should have actually been looking at the facets of their game that would allow them, you know, to suit their players better. I mean, I had it my own playing time with Meath where, you know, Banty came in, a Monaghan man, you know, trying to bring us a different mentality to it, an Ulster mentality. Coaching staff were all from Ulster. It just didn't work for the players that we had. It was never going to be, lads were going to try their best, and they did try their best to implement what was being asked of them. But just the whole psychology behind the style of play and all of that just wasn't suitable to the playing personnel that we had, because it was alien the way guys were playing at club level. Players wanted to kick the ball, they wanted to do a certain thing. So they tried one thing, wasn't really working, and to their credit, then they started to adapt and try different things. And ultimately, it didn't really work out because performance levels weren't there. But that's what managers have to be able to do, is look at the tools at their disposal and work these scenarios in a game-to-game basis. And Donegal probably have it sussed for themselves as to what they want to do. They're quite mature. Mayo, to a certain extent, have it, but I don't think they're as good as Donegal. And obviously Dublin are miles away from everybody at the minute.
Yeah, it looks to be that way. Right, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Oh, is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
Looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in Coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, we want to start off with Shane McEntee. Keane, he's your nomination here. You saw all this game. I saw the first 30 minutes and geez, it was a hard watch now. It was maybe the first 25 minutes. It was something like 3-2 or 4-3 and it was fairly laboured. This game, it obviously sparked into life in the second half when Meath just started raining goals. 5-5 to 5 points in a half. A very, very bizarre scoreline.
Yeah, extremely strange game of football in many ways. I mean, look, it was a hard watch, not only because I don't know what Nokia phone, a Nokia 3210 or something from the late 90s or something that was being.
It was blurry, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely brutal coverage. But that I suppose was almost a reflection of the game. It was something that you nearly wanted to watch through grit, you know, with blurred vision because it was such poor stuff at times. Look, Meade grounded out. Shane McEntee was probably my pick from the Meade players because of just he summed up everything about the Meade team as they are in their current guise, which is they're an extremely hard-working team. It's all about just work rate and effort and desire to work for the team. And they have probably limited skill sets in terms of the attacking side of the game. I mean, Jordan Morris has come into it and has added a little bit of flair and creativity up front. But aside from him, we're quite dull. We're robotic in terms of our forward play. But that's the way the team is set up. I mean, the guys from all sectors of the field are covering huge amount of ground, you know, working very hard in the middle sector to try and put pressure on, getting back into the defensive third and trying to get turnovers. But in fairness to me, and Andy McAtee touched on it after the game, he was quite disappointed, as I suppose most Meade fans would have been, with performance in the first half, which was, you know, very, very passive, no pressure on Kildare, you know, really not what you would associate the current team with. So Meade were very, very lucky. Kevin Flynn for Kildare had a really poor miss. He had a gilt-edged goal-scoring opportunity, which clipped
across. Bounced the ball again.
Yeah, took a play when he didn't need to. Really should have been in the back of the net, a complete let-off for Meade. And that kind of kept Meade in the game because Kildare, you know, when there wasn't a glove been laid on them, were doing some nice things and getting some scores and holding on to the ball. And in the second half, Meade forced a couple of mistakes from Kildare in their own defence and got two goals. And the goals completely changed the face of the match. I mean, it looked like Kildare were going to roll on for probably a reasonably easy victory, and Meade management, the players were going to be left after the game scratching their heads saying, how did we put such a flat performance out on the pitch? And somehow they managed to get a couple of turnovers and get the ball into the Kildare net on a couple of occasions, and all of a sudden it was compounded again by more mistakes and some reasonably decent play from Meade on the counter-attack where they obviously have very strong runners. But certainly a very uninspiring performance from both teams. And it would nearly make you, having watched the game, I was almost depressed thinking, God, I don't know if I can even face watching the game against Dublin next weekend. But the one thing I would say is that that's probably the worst Meade performance that there's been in, I'd say, 18 months or 2 years. Probably as bad a performance as when they were beaten by Longford in the Championship a number of years ago. It was really, really poor stuff. But they managed to somehow turn the game on its head and get the scores. And I suppose if you score 12 goals in two matches, you have to say it can't be all accidental. And if you look at the running power that they have from deep, the willingness of players to support the man in possession when they are breaking in open space, and the fact that they've managed to score goals from numerous turnovers high up the field. You know, when Meade are doing what they're good at, they're a very difficult team to play against. But unfortunately, in the first half against Kildare, they were really, really poor. And that would worry me going into the Dublin match, is that if Meade have in any way, shape or form that type of sort of passive performance, against Dublin. I mean, the game is going to be well out of sight after 20 minutes. Not even, it won't even take till half time. It was so poor. And I suppose Kildare will really be looking at themselves and wonder how they somehow contrived to lose the game from the position that they were in. And when you consider that Meath were so poor for the first half.
Yeah, exactly. I think two of their goals kind of summed up Meath. Like, I mean, you know what you get from them. The Joey Wallace goal was great pressure from Shane Walsh, and then the ball broke on the ground and Ryan Jones just dived in and punched it. Came out of nowhere, just attacked the ball. The O'Sullivan goal came from a good interception from him and Paddy Brophy. Paddy Brophy probably at fault for two of the goals. You'd say Donlan in goals probably at fault for the Morris goal. It was just right, you know, at the near post. Shouldn't be letting those ones in. Like, it was an interesting one. I don't want to be too critical of him, Conan, here. Like, I mean, Daniel Flynn was in the stitches laughing at the final whistle. Did you see that? Like, I mean, on the telly. I was just taken aback by it. I'm a big fan of Daniel Flynn, and I don't want to highlight him because these things can happen. It's just very unusual after losing to Meath. Like, I mean, it famously happened with Colin McFadden. The camera went to the subs bench and he was laughing on the subs bench and they're getting annihilated by Armagh. Now, you know, Colin McFadden didn't turn out too well, so I'm not going to be overly critical. Is it just a reflection of Kildare where they're at that a player might be even thinking about kind of laughing after the final whistle?
I know it's probably a reflection of the game as well, when they were 9 points down before the last goal. Was that the case, Walls? And I sympathise with him a little bit. Like, I remember telling a story here, and then Kane made me think twice about it, but I said about telling a joke in the changing rooms one time, and then the manager pulling everybody out of the showers and gathering everybody around who were trying to leave early, and it was just about the attitude and, like, people not hurting enough. And I think Kane had rightly said that he would never be joking around after a match as well. And I think when you're Daniel Flynn and you're the face of Kildare football, then it's all the more scrutinized. So yeah, probably not as his finest hour, but I do have a bit of sympathy with him. The game's over, it was long over, and yeah, life goes on.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those, isn't it, where when you're kind of well beaten, when the game was over with 10 minutes left, I mean,
yeah, he accepted it.
So everybody on the team has kind of like, well, that's the end of that. I mean, you know, you've kind of accepted defeat because it's so obvious. You know, I'm sure if Kildare had lost the game by a point, they would have been thinking, Jesus, how do we not get over the line? And look, every character in a dressing room is slightly different. I'd be very reluctant to be overly critical of a guy. I mean, just let's face it, he could have been a really good friend of his who plays with me. Maybe they were in college together. I don't know. And let's face it, nobody sees each other at this time of the year. But your competitive spirit would just have it in you that, like, yeah, okay, laughing and joking after the final whistle. I mean, I can remember a situation where, I mean, when we beat Dublin and we had scored all the goals against them, and, you know, a couple of the Dublin players were, you know, sort of jovial with me after the game, and I couldn't really understand that mentality, you know, and they went on to win a load of All-Ireland. So, I mean, who's to say who's right and who's wrong? But it's
I would never do that on the field. Now, I get over it pretty quickly. After my shower, I get out to the bus. I'm nearly right. You know, I'm not going to sit in the bus with a face on me. I'm ready to maybe joke at that stage, but I'm not ready to joke standing on the field.
No, well, I think, look, it's just the optics of it again. Look, I don't know. I personally, it wouldn't be for me. I'd probably have a bit of a face of thunder on me after losing a game. If we have a game amongst ourselves in training, I'm probably sour leaving. But not everybody is as dull as me, and some people just have a bit more to their lives. So I'm not going to be overly critical for a guy for being a little bit balanced. But certainly as a teammate, and as maybe a management of a team, when so much effort and everything goes into it, sometimes it's just maybe not a great look. And maybe, yeah, it's something that guys can maybe do in the comfort of, as you say, the change rooms or afterwards when they've had a chance to get their war colours off them. I suppose if you were from the rugby mentality, you'd say, look, once you have your jersey off you, maybe the war is over and you can move on a little bit with your life. But again, I wouldn't be overly critical. We see it all the time in professional sports now. I mean, soccer players are practically hugging and kissing each other after the final whistle in games when they might have suffered a humiliating defeat. So, I mean, that's just what a certain generation have grown up seeing. Maybe
I don't like it, Cian. That doesn't mean I like it. I don't like it. Don't give a soccer analogy, making that's okay with that absolute nonsense.
I'm going to apologise to the PC Brigade and say Daniel Flynn should never play for Kildare again. Disgraceful.
Okay, listen, Kieran Kilkenny and Brian Fenton are getting a joint nomination because Kieran Kilkenny, I didn't see much of his good performance because I only saw the first half of this in highlights. And Brian Fenton was the dominant player in the first half of this when I was watching it before the hurling came on. I had no stomach to watch it any longer. The game was over. Like, I mean, one thing that jumps out to me, Conan, you watched all of this. Like, I mean, Kieran Kilkenny's taken a hand pass, letting it bounce and taking it on the volley. We have Brian Fenton through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and instead of burying it in the net, he drop kicks it. Now, if you drop kick the ball with Mick O'Dwyer, you could get taken off. He just didn't like it, which is surprising considering it was in vogue back then. Yeah, you couldn't. But like, drop kicking is a very, very risky tactic. It's very hard to get right, especially on the run with Fenton. All I'm doing is looking. As Jim Gavin sitting watching those two plays, he's like, these lads have changed. I'm like, these are not the players I nurtured for 5 years. 7 years.
Yeah. I like the drop kick because it reminded me of Anthony Tuchel. I remember he used to do that a few times when he was bearing down on goal. And it was a great save. Like, you know, you have to say Corbett was having a good game shot stopping wise. And yeah, like in another day, he might have roofed it. It was coming in from a tight enough angle. I don't mind that. And the Kilkenny thing, I was actually just surprised because Kilkenny is so... robotic,
boring.
Yeah, he always does the right thing, like, you know, and yeah. I couldn't believe it. Just a lovely bit of flair to half volley it in. But no, I'm with Fenton there. He seems disappointed if he's not scoring 1-3 every game though. So it's scary the level he's trying to get to.
I actually mean Kieran Kilkenny's boring in a compliment, if that's possible. He just seems to do the right thing on the ball all the time. Just quickly, I just want to sum up this. Like, I mean, Mike Quirk said afterwards, should we have put everyone behind the ball and lost by 10, or should we have had a go? I suppose having a go, full forward line, left completely isolated. Again, similar to a lot of the tactics. You talk about having a go. Like, I mean, leaving a full forward line kind of in place in the first half, they caused some problems for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then it's like, it's too much of a disconnect. Again, I keep talking about it without being able to play up through some sort of a line. If you want to play a three in a full forward line, why not play two on the half forward line and one inside? At least you have a connection to the fella inside instead of playing three and there being too much of a disconnect. What ends up happening is you're trying to work the ball out through the hand. Dublin are putting a fierce amount of pressure on you and they're getting turnover after turnover after turnover. So, like, I mean, give it a go. They didn't try my tactics of just launching it up the
That's
field
the thing, yeah.
like 1970s football. But anyways, Les, I have a hurling show to do and we have to continue on here. Conor Madden, obviously another nomination. He was outstanding. Owen McLaughlin, brilliant pace from the half-back line, an outstanding player. Like, I mean, here we go, pace. You have Durkin, you have Owen McLaughlin on the two wings. You have Oisín Mullen coming from deep. You have Lee Keegan, who still looks like he has a bit of pace because he chased Shane Walsh at one stage. And I was very surprised that Shane Walsh wasn't getting too far away from him. It was interesting when Paul Kelly went off the field, Owen McLaughlin completely came into the game for maybe the last 10 or 15 minutes. So he was outstanding. Jerome Johnson surprised me a little bit, Keen. I've talked about Jerome Johnson before. Flatters to deceive a little bit too much for me, even for Kilku. Hit 5 from play in one half, and the ones we saw in the highlights, all from his wrong side.
Yeah, he kicked a few brilliant scores, and I suppose maybe when you see him doing those types of things, that's maybe why we always expect maybe a little bit more from him, or expect to see it on a more consistent basis. But I suppose the point is, it's not very easy to score 5 points from play in a half of football, and certainly not at inter-county level. So and look, it was a struggle in the second half for him, but also for the entire down team. But he kicked some cracking scores in the first half.
Yeah, he did. Like, it's pure, it's just basic mathematics. If you score 5 in the first half, you should be finishing the game with 10, Conor.
Yeah, Luke Fortune was struggling with him initially. But yeah, as I said, Jason McLaughlin did well and Cavan got on top. So I think he did his bit and the rest didn't follow.
Yeah, Padraig Mogan's been the surprise package. He's in all-star form as well. Like, I mean, I don't want to go down that road. If you're picking all-stars now, who'd get one? But if he continues on the way he's going, brilliant goal in the league against Tyrone as well. Like, I mean, it's almost like a lot of good players in their very first season, it's like they don't have the respect. If it was Ryan McHugh, for example, coming onto that break with Michael Murphy, Keane, I can guarantee you that Kennedy and Fokker would have been more switched on than, you know, Padraig Mogan. Or what's he going to do? Like, I mean, Mogan will get a full season with this attitude before next year he starts getting nailed.
Yeah, well, I think that's always, everybody always has to suffer maybe from the second season syndrome, where everybody has a bit of an idea who you are maybe, or what you're capable of. But look, he's doing really, really well. I mean, he's made such a big impact for them His pace is electric, and he's picking up good positions and dangerous positions, and just the timing of when he's getting into these moves is probably the most impressive thing for a young player and inexperienced at this particular level, but making huge impact for them. And I don't know if he's going to be given as much space in the next few games.
No, Shane Walsh and Paul Conroy, I suppose, were the standout players for Galway, kicked some spectacular scores. Nothing we haven't seen before, Conan, if we're being honest. Like, I mean, they did take the fight single-handedly. And again, like I've said before, Paul Conroy plays really well in a game Galway lose. Listen, you didn't believe me the last time.
That's true, actually. I thought you were talking shit, but you're right. Yeah, a couple of absolute crackers that nobody's going to talk about because yet again, they lost.
Yeah, absolutely devastated. Like, there's nothing worse than a great performance that you lose. It's just completely forgotten about. And there's nothing worse than being fouled after a great run and the free taker missing it, because that point is forgotten about as well. There's loads of little things here that would drive you absolutely mad. One other... No, actually, do you know what, lads? I have to finish the show because I have a hurling show to do. we'll pick it up on Thursday. We'll be back then and we'll talk to everybody then. Good luck.
Finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.